It's a great honor for me now to get to introduce our guest speaker today. Dr. Ron Holt is a board-certified psychiatrist, author, and national speaker. For over two decades, Holt has been a relentless advocate and educator on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender issues and civil rights. In 2008, Dr. Holt expanded his presentations nationally to include LGBTQ plus healthcare, the consequences of bullying, and suicide risk reduction. He has presented to hundreds of audiences, including physician audience, like some of you here today, on how to provide culturally competent care to the LGBTQ plus community. Holt, along with his husband, William Hudgett, who is also a medical doctor, have published a self-help book and supportive coloring books for the LGBTQ plus community. He's received several awards across the country for his community service and commitment to diversity. In the late 2000s, Dr. Holt received his previous employer's David Lawrence Community Service Award and the R.J. Erickson Diversity Achievement Award, making him the first physician within the Kaiser Permanente to receive both awards in the individual category. In 2022, he was elevated to Distinguished Life Fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and graduated from SFSU with a master's degree in sexuality. His master's thesis was original research entitled The Impact of Rural Geography on Sexual Identity. And I had the pleasure of sitting in and listening to Dr. Holt's presentation of that thesis, and it was wonderful research. In addition to being a KCU adjunct assistant professor, Dr. Holt currently practices as a student health physician at San Francisco State University. Dr. Holt is known throughout the country for this work, and it's a great pleasure that we're able to bring him to our HSC audience today. So with that, Dr. Holt, we are looking forward to your remarks, sir.
Okay, thank you so much. Can you hear me okay? Awesome. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and switch over to my screen here. All right, are you able to see that video? Okay, perfect. All right. All right, everybody. Hi. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you today. For the next 32 minutes, I'm going to be giving you a talk on how to create an LGBTQ-friendly environment in the clinical setting. You're more than welcome to drop questions in the chat stream, but I just want you to know that we're not going to go over Q&A until the end, because I think a lot of information that I'm going to give you right now is going to actually answer some of those questions. All right. So our learning objectives today, just kind of give you an idea of some of the things we're going to cover, is ways to create a safe and welcoming environment for our LGBTQ patients, allowing for more optimal care, how to demonstrate to approach sensitive topics with our LGBTQ patients to enhance patient disclosure and subsequent outcomes, and also how to create a safe environment that will allow patients to feel comfortable to come out to us as providers, all right? So just to kind of give you a brief overtake of what we're doing is I'm gonna spend a few minutes here talking about why this is important, followed by how we can start to create a safe and welcoming environment through the waiting room, our intake forms, our interactions as us as providers. We'll then go over risk factors for LGBTQ folks. We'll talk about intro on how to do a sexual history, trans interactions, how to help a colleague, a student, our patients, and also a child, how to come out to us. We'll go over that as well. And then we'll talk briefly about suicide assessment. And then I will give you access to or a link on how to get free access to my downloadable coloring books. All right. Okay. So why is this important? So I'm going to spend a few minutes here talking about three things. And one, I'm just going to give you an abbreviated history of my story, because I know that there are some of you that are listening to this that can understand and appreciate where I'm coming from, because maybe you're going through this as well. I'm then going to go over some surveys with you that were done with the National Center for Trans Equality and also the Trevor Project. And then I'm going to give you some real life examples of people who are actually who are going through issues in the community right now because of their sexual identity or gender identity. And so I think it's important for us, we can sit here and talk about how important it is to provide a safe and welcoming environment, but we can act when we actually see real life scenarios of what's going on, it really kind of gives us a much better idea of just how important this is that we are able to provide safety for all of our students and patients and faculty and staff. Okay. So what I want to talk about first is just tell you a little bit about my own story. So I was born and raised in Nebraska, and I had a homophobic father. And it was very difficult coming out. I knew that I was gay from a very young age, but I couldn't put a label on it. I knew around sixth grade, but I would hear daily rants from my father about homophobia and just talking bad about gay people. And so it really didn't allow me to be open and honest about who I was. And so I struggled with that tremendously through junior high and high school. And it wasn't until college that I was able to meet my now husband. We weren't able to come out to others at the time, but we came out to each other. And so we actually lived kind of a closeted life, right? We had that double life where we would, you know, be in college and do things that normal college students do. But then we also had this secret life where we were seeing each other, but we didn't let others know, because if we did, we either would have been kicked out of school or our parents would not have allowed us to have the finances to finish. And so that was a very difficult thing that we struggled with. And so it wasn't until medical school that I actually came out at KCU in the fall right after my finals in school. And this was in the fall of 89. And it was not a good experience for me at all. In the interest of time, I'm not going to tell my whole story here. But long story short is that my partner and I had to go into physical hiding because my father had threatened to kill us. And so it was a very stressful time for us and a very difficult time. And I struggled throughout my 4 years of medical school because I was always afraid that my father was going to come to my campus and out me. And so that made it very difficult. And so long story short, for the past 25 years now, I've been coming back to the Midwest to talk about LGBTQ issues because I want to be that role model that I didn't have when I was young and struggling with my sexual orientation and gender identity. And I know that some of you that are on this talk today are actually can identify with what I'm saying. And so I want you to know that you're not alone and that you're loved and that there are resources that are out there that are available for you. Okay. So now what I want to do is go over a couple of surveys here. And the first one was from the 2015 U.S. Trans Survey. They didn't have a more recent one because of COVID, but my understanding is that they're now looking for survey participants for the 2022 survey. And so these are just some stats then from 7 years ago about what a trans person actually goes through. Almost one third said that they were homeless at one point in their life. One third were living in poverty compared to just 12% in the general population. 40% had psychiatric distress versus 5% in the general population. Almost 40% had a suicide attempt at some point in their lifetime, and that compares to 4.6% in the general population. 7% had a suicide attempt in the past year, which is nearly 12 times higher than the rate in the U.S. population. One third had a negative experience in the healthcare setting. Almost a quarter did not seek healthcare due to a fear of mistreatment. And one third did not go to a healthcare provider because they could not afford it. And so you can see just by these stats alone just how darn important it is for us to create a safe and welcoming environment so people are able to get the care and services that they need. So in 2021, the Trevor Project came out with a survey for LGBTQ youth from the ages of 13 to 24. And these stats were pretty sobering as well. 42% had seriously considered attempting suicide, including over half of trans and non-binary youth. Over 80% stated that COVID-19 made their situation worse and more stressful. 70% stated that their mental health was poor most or all of the time during COVID-19. Almost half reported wanting mental health treatment but were not able to receive it. 13% reported undergoing conversion therapy, with 83% occurring under the age of 18. almost one-third experienced food insecurity in the previous month, and a whopping 75% experienced either sexual orientation or gender identity discrimination at least once in their life. So, and a whopping almost 95% said that recent politics have negatively impacted their well-being. So you can imagine with all these laws that are being passed against LGBTQ people, or at least introduced in the state houses, that number is probably higher. And I can tell you from the stats from 20 to 21 that the thoughts of suicide have gone up, the rates of conversion therapy have gone up, and people who said that politics have negatively impacted their well-being have also gone up. So our stats are getting worse and not better. So I want to give you some real life examples here. I took some of my money from the Ellen DeGeneres prize show and decided to do an outreach to people who are struggling around the holidays. And this was in December 18 and December 19. And I just set something up on Google Docs, and I sent out an example of my coloring books. And I said, you know, are you struggling with your sexual orientation or gender identity and aren't able to be at home with your family due to rejection? You know, if so, I can't change that. However, I can give you a coloring book. And so there were certain questions that I had to ask on there in order to get the address to give it to them. But there was another question that was just an optional one, and it was about, tell me about yourself. And so I'm going to share with you over the next five slides direct quotes from people, mostly from rural areas all over the So I did this in the U.S. and in Canada. So I had comments from around the west, northern hemisphere about how they've been impacted. So the first one was from rural Kentucky, who wrote, I was kicked out after years of fighting my parents about my identity shortly after I graduated high school. The holidays since have been lonely, and they tend to get me down at times because I've always been a huge holidays fanatic. It's always strange now when it's just me sitting home by myself and not celebrating, but I will never give my identity up. I am proud to be the transgender male that I am, and I hope to be getting top surgery in this new year. And this one was from rural Utah, who wrote, I'm a college student who recently came out to my conservative Mormon family. I had to drop out of BYU and take a full-time job to provide for myself. I read your book and love knowing that my experiences are not unique and that I am not alone. This one was from rural Oklahoma. I first realized my sexuality 4 years ago when I moved to Oklahoma with my dad and met my best friend. Recently, we've been started dating. I decided to come clean to my family, and that resulted in me being kicked out about 2 weeks ago. I'm now staying with my girlfriend and her family. Unfortunately, I lost my job due to the ties with my family. The holiday season is rapidly approaching, but I still have my girlfriend's family, and for that, I am so grateful. This one was from rural California. I'm trans, and my family doesn't know. Every time I visit them, I have to hide my binder, get deadnamed, and misgendered. I'm too scared to come out to them. And from rural Minnesota, a person wrote, I am bisexual, and I am too afraid to come out because I don't think that I will be taken seriously or accepted. And this one was from a woman in Ontario, Canada. I'm a mother of a trans son, and I am gay, and my family has chosen to disown us both. My partner is trans as well, but we live in different countries. The world has become a very lonely place. And the last one I want to share from you is from rural Pennsylvania. This is my second Christmas without my biological family. When I came out as bisexual last year, my dad told me that I am possessed by a demon and my mom supported him. So we are not currently in contact. It's hard to constantly be reminded of old age traditions during the holidays and having such mixed emotions about these memories. So now I've shared with you my story, I've shared with you surveys, and I've shared with you some real life examples. So this gives us a good catalyst or start to understand how important it is for us to create a safe and welcoming environment. And that actually starts with our waiting room. So the waiting room is a very important place because that's when a person first walks in and kind of gets a layout of, is this a safe environment or not? I can tell you as a gay man going into a doctor's office, I'm immediately scanning the room. Like, is there a pride flag somewhere, or is there a non-discrimination clause that's listed somewhere that includes sexual orientation or gender identity? How are the bathrooms marked? Is it just male or female, or is it gender queer or genderless bathrooms? These are important things that we have to think about, whether it's in a clinic or even in a school setting, that makes a student and or a patient feel comfortable. And so other examples on here, they talked about brochures or maybe having some posters that are up that show about the intersectionality of maybe sexual orientation, gender identity, and race. The more that we can make our physical environment more inviting, the patients are more likely to feel comfortable telling us about who they are. And so what we're doing is we're setting the stage for deeper discussions with them as they first come into our clinic. So they come in and we see a virtual front desk form, and then it starts with the intake form, right? And so if we have an intake form on here, for example, we have down gender, male, female, trans, or other, sexual orientation, identity, bisexual, gay, straight, lesbian, queer, etc. So what we're doing is by having an inclusive intake form, we're immediately putting that person at ease, saying, gosh, I came into this office and I noticed that there's a non-discrimination or there's a pride flag in there. And now I'm filling out this intake form. And I see that allows me to talk about my gender identity or my sexual orientation. So imagine the messages that we're sending to them, that this is a safe environment for them to be who they are. So it's really important for us to be able to do that. And studies have shown that having a more inclusive intake form allows for people to be more likely to tell you about what's going on with them more on a personal basis, about two to three times more likely than if we have more than just maybe perhaps just a generic form that just has maybe gender as male or female and has nothing on there about sexual orientation. So the next thing then, so they come in, they fill out the intake form, and then they deal with us as providers, whether we're the medical student or we're the front desk person or we're the receptionist or the physician, the nurse, whoever, right? And so as we're perusing the intake form, as we're walking back, we're checking to see what kind of things are going to be important for us to talk about. If they have things on there about their gender identity or their sexual orientation, or they put things down about their sexual history, those are things for us to think about as we formulate questions that we're going to ask about when we're in the waiting room or when we're in the room with them. And so it's really important for us to always use their terminology. And so if someone comes in and identifies as queer, then you use the term queer with them. If they identify as gay, then you use their terminology. It's not interchangeable. If someone comes in and says, marks down that they're gay, then you say, oh, I see that you're queer. That may be a derogatory term to them, or they may not identify with it. So it's really important to use their terminology. In order to help with pronouns, I think it's really important for us to do introductions. So for instance, I could say, hi, my name is Dr. Colt. I go by he and him, and you are, right? So we're opening the door for them to feel comfortable to talk about their pronouns as well. Also, there's a rainbow pen that you can have on your jacket. I don't know if you can see this little pen that I have here in front of me, but that's something the person could put on their jacket. And so sometimes if we even forget to say all those things that we just talked about, just having like an LGBTQ affirmative little flag or pen on our jacket or our coat can make a huge difference, right? We're sending them messages that you are a safe person. Also, if you feel like disclosure is appropriate, that's great. Say that you have a LGBTQ clinic there at TTU or somewhere in the community, and people are expecting to go into a place that's queer affirmative. And if you identify as a queer person and you're out there publicly, if you feel like it's appropriate to disclose about who you are, that's great. If not, that's fine too. So I can give you an example. So I can say, hey, my name is Dr. Holt. I go by he and him. Did you have a great weekend? And they may say, yes, I did. I did this, this, and that. And you can say, oh, that's great. My husband and I went out boating or whatever. So I'm disclosing information to them to make them feel safe that I identify with their community and that I am a safe person for them to disclose whenever they feel ready to do that. Okay. So the next thing is that, LGBTQ people, why is it that they have all these stats against them? Well, it's not innate. It's not that we're born that way. It's because of the discrimination that we receive. It's because of the stigma. It's because of the rejection. It's because of all these things that we hear from society, and then we internalize that and make it part of our own. And so it's okay for us to kind of talk about that, whether you're with the student there at your university or you're in the clinic. It's always important to ask open-ended questions and to actually acknowledge some of the risk factors. And so a person could say, John, in the LGBTQ community, people are at higher risk for, you know, thoughts of suicide or for mental health issues because of the way that society treats them. Has that ever happened to you? Right? And so what we're doing is we're normalizing the conversation with them, and we're also acknowledging the risk factors as well, because we want them to feel safe to talk about this. And so we're setting the stage for a deeper discussion. So they may not tell you a lot of stuff during their initial session with you. However, when time goes on and the more that they hear how welcoming you've been from the first session with them onward, you're opening the door so that they feel more comfortable for you when they are ready to come out. All right. So the next thing is a brief introduction here about a sexual history. And so, you know, on the intake form, you can see here, like, for instance, like we say, are you HIV positive? Yes or no? Have you been diagnosed with and are treated with? And we have different STDs on there. And so what we're doing is we're inviting the person to put things down for them in the intake form. And so them completing this form is great, because then that kind of gives you a leeway into the things that you need to talk about. But also by them not filling out this section also gives you an idea of what you need to talk about as well. And so, for instance, a patient comes in and they fill out this form, but they don't fill out the sexual history. And so it'd be okay to say, you know, John, thank you so much for filling this form, but I noticed you didn't mark anything in sexual history. Oh, yeah, doc, you know, actually, you know, I didn't feel comfortable talking about that right now. It's like, oh, okay, I appreciate you letting me know. And so that often opens up a conversation. Or if they say that they feel something else, like, oh, yeah, I see that you marked that you've been tested for HIV. It's like, yeah, that, you know, doc, as a matter of fact, I have, but it was 5 years ago and a lot's happened since then. It's like, oh, well, okay, great. Can you tell me more about that? All right. So we're opening the door for them to feel comfortable talking about their sexuality and their sexual history. And if they don't feel comfortable talking about it, we certainly don't want to force them to, correct? So if it ends up that we say, you know, I noticed you filled out this form, but you haven't filled out that part yet. It's like, well, doc, I don't feel comfortable talking about that yet. And the answer is, that's okay. I'll tell you what, next time we see each other, we can talk more about sexual history. How does that sound? Oh, that sounds great, doc. Thanks so much. Okay. All right. The next thing is that opening the door to trans health. And so that starts with the intake form, right? The intake form is so important because it opens the doors for a lot of conversations. And so friends, it's like you could say, I noticed on here that you marked down that you're transgender, that you're gender queer, or that you didn't fill that out. Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure where I am yet in my journey, but thank you for asking. And so it allows us to open the door, but we don't want to push them, right? If they're not ready to talk about it, that's fine. But if they are, that's great. If we accidentally offend them, which can happen, I've done it myself over the couple decades that I have practiced. If we accidentally offend somebody, the thing that we immediately do is that we apologize, right? We don't make a big deal, but we just say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to misgender you, I didn't mean to dead name you or whatever, and then we just kind of move on, right? Apologies can go a long way, and it's okay for medical providers to apologize. So we also have to be honest about our knowledge as well. And so say that a patient comes in and say this, that, you know, doc, I'm here, I'm trans, I want to start hormones. And you may not know, you may not have a lot of trans healthcare experience. And so you could always say, you know, I appreciate and I respect your gender identity, but I can tell you that I don't have a lot of experience in trans health. However, I am going to make sure that my nurse contacts you by the end of the day with some resources or the name of some doctors who does treat trans people, because I want you to get the best care possible, but I don't think that I'm the person who has enough knowledge to do that. And I think people respect you much more when you're able to be honest and open about how much knowledge you have. Okay. The last thing here is that I think it's really important that we need to assess what is present. So you may have some people that have not come in to see a doctor. You saw those stats earlier, right? Where up to a quarter of people were thrown out in decades before. So you may have a person who's trans who hasn't come in for healthcare maybe 10, 15, 20 years, right? And so they may have, say it's a trans male, and maybe they haven't had a pap smear for many decades. And so it's important for us to recognize their gender identity, but also let them know that we need to treat the anatomy that is present. And so you could say, you know, thank you very much for filling out this form. I totally identify and accept your gender identity. Thank you so much for telling me. I noticed that you haven't had a pap smear here for a couple of months or a couple of years or maybe decades. It's like, yeah, doc, you know, I really don't identify with the gender or with the anatomy that I was born with, so I don't feel comfortable doing that. It's like, well, I understand that, but I just want you to know that we need to treat the anatomy that's present because I want to give you the best care possible. And usually they're like, okay, you know, I understand that. Let's go ahead and move forward. Again, if they're not ready to do that and they say, you know, I'm not ready, I don't identify, I loathe the anatomy that I was born with, you know, the answer would be, okay, that's fine. Thank you for telling me. Why don't we discuss this during our next session together? Okay. So again, during this initial intake, we're just trying to get them to feel comfortable with us and to be able to explore the issues that are most important to them. Okay. All right. So next is opening the door to coming out. So we have to assess where the patient is first, right? And we need to form an alliance with them. Coming out is a very personal issue for a lot of people, and people are always coming out to various people, but they need to feel safe before they come out to you, right? Either as the provider or the instructor or as a colleague, et cetera. And so I want to give you four examples here of ways to set the stage for someone to come out to you without prematurely outing them. And the first one is, so let's just say that you're with a colleague at TTU, right? And say, you know, John, it's been great working with you here in Texas. We've been teaching this class together for 5 years. I feel like we've really become like brothers. I really enjoy spending time with you. If there's ever anything in your life that you want to tell me about yourself, please know that our friendship will never change, right? And then you just drop it. All right. You don't follow it up saying, are you ready to come out? Right. What we're doing is we're just setting the stage for them to know that we're a safe zone. Second example could be, say that you're with a patient. It's like, you know, John, I've been your doctor for 10 years now. I've really enjoyed working with you. We'll always have a professional relationship, and I'll always enjoy taking care of you. If there's anything that you ever want to tell me during our sessions, it's not going to change our relationship, and I'll always take care of you to the best of my ability. And then you drop it, right? Another example is a child. Say that I'm dad. I can say, you know, Johnny, happy 13th birthday. I love you very much. My love for you is unconditional. If there's ever anything in your life that you want to tell me about yourself, my love for you will never change. Right. And then you drop it. And the last one, say that you're a faculty person in there at TTU and you think you may have a student who may be struggling or they're not ready to come out yet. You know, you could say, you know, I've really enjoyed being your professor, John. I really enjoy having you in my classes. I think you're going to be a great doctor or nurse or whatever it is that they're training for. I just want you to know that I enjoy working with you and teaching you. And if there's ever anything that you want to share with me, our friendship or our relationship will never change, and I am there for you, okay? So all four of those are examples of way that we open the door. We never want to prematurely out somebody. By doing that, we put them at higher risk for mental health issues and higher risk for suicide at the time. So we never want to force somebody out, okay? So one of the last things here is opening the door to suicide prevention. So you saw those stats earlier, right, that the LGBTQ community are at much higher risk for suicide attempts compared to cis straight people, okay? And so the important things to remember is that in suicides, the two highest risk factors are previous suicide attempts and a presentation of suicidal ideations, okay? And so we need to assess where the patient is. And I think, again, like we did other conversations, we need to normalize this one as well. And so you may have a patient that comes in and you think they may be struggling, or say that they fill out a depression form and they're high risk for depression. You could say, you know, John, I noticed on here that your presenting complaint was depression. We had you fill out this form and you were high on here. And I just want you to know that people in the LGBTQ community are at higher risk for suicide. And I'm wondering, has that ever happened to you? It's like, well, as a matter of fact, Dad, it has. Oh, really? Can you tell me more? All right. So we're opening the door for them to feel comfortable talking to us about suicide. All right. And then the important thing is that if you have a conversation with them and you feel like they're not going to be safe leaving your office or leaving your classroom or wherever you happen to be, make sure that they're able to see somebody who specializes in this to give them a full suicide assessment before they leave that area. Okay. And so just to give you an idea, highest risk to lowest risk, we kind of went over this. Trans people are at highest risk for suicide attempts. We saw over 40%. And for trans people of color, it's over 50% that have had a suicide attempt. And majority of those suicide attempts have been before the age of 25. Okay. After that, it's questioning and bisexual people. They're generally at 4 to 5 times higher at risk for suicide attempts compared to their straight peers. Gay men are usually about four times more likely, followed by lesbians that are 2 to 3 times more likely. Okay, so yes, the LGBTQ community is at higher risk, but some in the community are at higher risk than others. Okay, so I want to tell you about some protective factors against suicide, and this came from the Trevor Project last year, and I think all of us that are listening to this can actually help reduce suicide by just following these simple tips. They said that trans and non-binary youth who reported having pronouns respected by all of the people that they live with attempted suicide at half the rate of those who did not have pronouns respected by anybody with whom they lived. The second thing is that trans and non-binary youth who were able to change their names and or gender markers on their legal documents, such as driver's license and birth certificates, they also reported lower rates of attempting suicide. And the last thing, which we're talking about today, is that LGBTQ youth who had access to spaces that affirmed their sexual orientation and gender identity reported lower rates of attempting suicide. So you can see just a recap here, ways to reduce suicide attempts, using their pronouns, identifying, affirming their identity, and creating a safe environment. So by us doing that, whether we're the doctor or the clinician or the professor or just a classmate, by us just affirming their pronouns, affirming their identity, and creating a safe environment, we're greatly lowering their risk for suicide attempts. And how great is that? Okay. And so I just to finish up here, I just wanted to let you know, back in 2018, I did a GoFundMe campaign. I took some of the Ellen DeGeneres money $500 of that and made it into $16,000 and was able to get 6,000 books out to nonprofits and colleges and pride groups across all 50 states and some provinces up in Canada. And so I just wanted to show you that by us affirming their identity and their pronouns and creating a safe environment through coloring, we can help lower their risk for mental health and suicidal thoughts. And so I just wanted to show you a picture of this. This group of people here were from a prom, a queer prom in Texas. So that just gives you an idea. You can see them all smiling. So we can make a difference by making it a safe environment for them. And I want you guys to know that I created a webpage for you called pridecoloringbooks.com. If you go to that webpage, you can download all of my coloring books for free. All right. So I want you to know that that's available for you. And so I just finished at the 31-minute mark. And so I'm going to end here. And